you are appointed as a commissioner. How would you convince us that you are able to step into the role? In doing so, please tell us about who you are, your values, and your experience.
Okay. Thank you, firstly, for the opportunity. I'm quite honored to be here. I have been an activist for most of my life. I think from the time I was 12, I started out following my older sisters and brothers. But it was my first kind of awareness of human rights, of justice, of equality. And that basically has influenced my career path from the time I started working to now. I've worked in government. I worked for the Department of International Relations a very long time ago. And I chose to join the department at the time when, you know, after democracy, when we all wanted to contribute something to building our country. And so that has always been an important part of who I am. Then I joined civil society and I worked in the environmental sector. And the environmental sector, for a long time, people think it's something out there, it's trees and it's the animals. And what gives me the drive to move forward is environmental justice. So it's linking people and degradation of the environment together and trying to get that justice. And that is, for me, fundamental about human rights. And so that's my, you know, that's where I come from. That's my background in terms of my work experience. What would I bring as a commissioner if given this position? Is firstly, I think I come from a background, well, from a civil society sector, and I have good links and networks. And I think that the Human Rights Commission has those links, but I can bring in even more of it and build on what people are saying on the ground and understanding the human rights violations on the ground. I would also bring in the kind of awareness around climate change and climate justice in terms of how that impacts on human rights. You know, I looked at what the South African Human Rights Commission works on. And if you look at things like immigration, xenophobia, racism, all of those things are directly linked to what's going to happen with climate change. We're going to have more migration. We're going to have more wars around water and resources. And there's going to be a lot more people who are going hungry. All of that fits into human rights. And so it's my passion for those issues and to find solutions that I think is important as a commissioner. On a personal level, I think, you know, I've been working for a long time. I have managerial expertise and skills. I also have some leadership skills, but I've also learned to listen and to hear what people are saying. And that for me is important as a commissioner.
Thank you very much. Do you have any criminal records?
No, I don't.
Were you at any stage declared to be insolvent?
No. Never.
Thank you very much. Are you aware about the salary of the commissioners in the South African Human Rights Commission?
If you ask me if I know how much people get, I don't.
The deputy chair will earn 1.2 million and the commissioner whose full term is 1,180,040 rands. Are you comfortable to take that post-salary?
Yes, of course. It's much more than I expected, but I think that is a very fair salary and it's good salary. Thank you. I mean, I'm not saying I got the position.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, I'm so nervous.
No, thank you very much. No, we'll give you time to drink water before the next honorable member asks you questions so that you don't become nervous. Members, let me note, members would want to ask questions. I have Honorable Breitenbach. Honorable Breitenbach, can you proceed with your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, madam. Why do you think that the Constitution requires that the Commission be both independent and impartial, and why the Constitution protects the Commission's independence?
Good afternoon, and sorry if I didn't do the protocol, but I greet to everyone and all of that. But in terms of that question, it's very clear that the Human Rights Commission is set up by the Constitution, and it is directly linked to the, you know, to Parliament and to government itself. And so it is important that it also has some level of independence so that it can operate. And that is why I think that is that it has to have that. You cannot be accountable to a political institution, but at the same time remain independent. I mean, you can, but that's why that whole thing was set up. The policy was, the legislation was set up so that you can have independence. Otherwise, you would have political influence. And the Human Rights Commission would not be able to carry out its mandate of protecting the rights of ordinary South Africans.
Thank you very much. If you are appointed, what legacy would you want to leave? Sorry, my dog. If you are appointed, what legacy would you want to leave?
I think for me, the legacy is to bring in the importance and the, you know, we're going through right now COVID. It's a pandemic, and we have seen how it has hit our country. But I don't think that that's going to be the last pandemic we deal with. I think that climate change is going to be an additional one. And we haven't really prepared for that. We haven't fully understood the impacts that is going to have on human rights. So for me, that would be an important legacy to bring the linkages between what seems to be a science and environmental issue into a human rights frame.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Bevenbach, are you done?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mofokeng.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Madam Adams. Can I check on a few questions with you? What is your understanding of the role of the South African Human Rights Commission that should play in supporting the parliamentary process? And what is the role of the National Assembly in supporting the South African Human Rights Commission?
Okay. Okay, so I think that there has to be a close linkage between the South African Human Rights Commission and Parliament, that we know, right? And that's set out in the Constitution. I think practically how that should happen is that there needs to be, so the Human Rights Commission needs to function independently. They need to be responsive to the requests and concerns that come to them, but they also have to be accountable. They have to be accountable to people, and they have to be accountable to Parliament. And I think that there has to be a strong working relationship, whether it is through having commissioners, report to Parliament regularly, or even having the portfolio committee attending some of the secretariat meetings, which I think then gets to the nitty-gritties of the Human Rights Commission, right? We don't do that enough. So it would be great for portfolio committee members to actually see what is going on and to understand the intricacies and the challenges that the Human Rights Commission is experiencing. I think that would be important. I also think for the Human Rights Commission, when they come out with reports, et cetera, to understand that they're reporting to Parliament as an independent body and not to just allow things to be, you know, pushed down. So that becomes a very fine line to actually travel.
Thank you. What suggestions do you have to improve the public understanding of the role of our Chapter 9 institutions or bodies?
I think that's a very important question, given, you know, just just the feeling and the morale and how South Africans reflect right now. And being from civil society, often when working with groups on the ground, people feel powerless. People feel helpless. And I think that and it needs, so what needs to happen is for our Section 9 institutions to be strengthened in the sense that we need to better use our skills of being out public, you know, the kind of being out in the public arena. So, for example, social media and media is very much what younger people use. It's their means of communication. And we need to find out how we better use that, because the Human Rights Commission has done some good work. If you look at the report on the Vaal Dam that just recently was reported, you know, there's good information, and it show, and people on the ground feel vindicated, especially in the Vaal, that someone has heard them. And that is important. So I think that there needs to be, it can be strengthened by creating a public profile, not creating and strengthening the public profile, strengthening how it works with young people, with media, and, you know, civil society. I think those linkages needs to be strengthened. And with that, giving people hope that something like the Human Rights Commission can actually help. And I think we saw that with other institutions where people can, where you've had leadership that shows that if they stand their ground, that South Africans will have faith in those structures. And I do think that is needed, and it is lacking right now in South Africa. People have lost hope in our Section 9 institutions.
Thank you very much. March is celebrated as a Human Rights Month. What can be done by the South African Human Rights Commission to combat schedules such as racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia and related intolerances, as well as gender-based violence and femicide, which are undermining South Africa's human rights culture? Thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that those are really, really big issues. So there's a few things. One is it needs to be called out when it's happening. So I think we tend to run away from issues that are, you know, that relate to xenophobia, racism, femicide, gender-based. Well, we're coming out stronger on gender-based violence. Great. That's a good thing. But on others, we're not as strong as yet. And we need to call it out. We need to call it what it is. That's the first thing. The second thing is to, I think there needs to be stronger building awareness and engagement in the public as a whole. I think that we do not have enough education and awareness on racism and xenophobia and femicide. And, you know, to the point where we need to do things like that in schools. We need to have trainings or, you know, kind of programs that we can go to schools and make people discuss these issues and put it on the table. And I think that's what's lacking, and that's it's a long process. It's not something that, you know, it can go away in a month. We can create awareness in a month. We can come up with great memes in a month. We can come up with great social media in a month. But these kind of issues are systemic. They're intrinsic in South Africa, and it takes a long battle to actually get rid of them. And I think that that needs a strategic kind of attack. And one would be greater education and awareness across the board in South Africa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Ms. Adam.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mofokeng. Honorable Breitenbach is in old hands. Honorable Swartz.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, Ms. Adams. Trust you're well.
Yes, thank you.
Can I ask you, just generally speaking, you did allude to a basic understanding of the Commission's constitutional duties. Can you just elucidate a bit on that, as how you would see the exercise of some of their powers in terms of their legislative function? that they are required to fulfill, both constitutional and legislative.
I'm sorry, are you asking me what is the powers, mandate of the, of the Human Rights Commission? Okay, so there's a few things that that the Human Rights Commission has been, that they can do. And that's keeping in line with legislation is, and with the legislation is the strategic mandates that they do have, right? Which is holding inquiries. They have the power to hold inquiries. They have the power for redress of victims. They have the power of holding hearings, which then feeds into and can act as checks and balances for between legislation and the judiciary and the different powers that government may have. So that's what I think would be, if you're asking me what is the powers of the Human Rights Commission. Have I answered your question?
No, that's fine. That's just general. I appreciate that. Now, you did touch on earlier a very good suggestion of members of the Portfolio Committee looking into a secretariat there where we would have an understanding of the challenges. So you seem to have a fair idea. Maybe you could just elucidate a bit, because obviously the Human Rights Commission is suffering a number of challenges, and how, if you were a commissioner, how you would address it, such as budgetary challenges and other challenges that you see.
So I'm speaking, you know, not from being inside the commission, so I could be corrected. I am speaking from what I see in media and what I've read in articles. So I think that there's a few things. One is whenever you deal with a structure that has almost 200 people, and you have a separation of the commissioners to the people who are doing the work within their, you know, as officers of the Human Rights Commission, I can almost guess that there's not enough communication between what the commissioners are doing and what the people in the various programmatic areas are doing. So I think that needs more communication and a better kind of working relationship. In terms of budgets, you know, I think that it's a difficult one because we get our budget. Well, I'm saying we, but the Human Rights Commission gets its budget because of its Section 9. It gets its budget from government, and it needs to work within that. So I think that what we would have to do as a commissioner is to put forward and be strong about the importance of protecting human rights, about the pathway that we need to take as an organization and an institution, and then basically argue for a stronger budget. That's getting budget from government. I don't know the policies in terms of having partnerships with maybe, you know, other organizations, global organizations, or even private sector in terms of funding particular parts of the work that we can do, which would assist our budgetary constraints.
Thank you. Lastly, just briefly, with the experience of COVID-19, and you have alluded to that, I think, or it was a brief, but just the experience that South Africa has experienced where there has been the Disaster Management Act, we've had extreme poverty, we've had the challenges with human rights and lockdown provisions against balanced against public health concerns. Do you think that the Human Rights Commission could have done more? For example, you had those horrendous soldiers issues with heaviness, heavy-handed approach from law enforcement agencies, and where you had a number of citizens having to resort to the courts, where one would have thought that maybe the Human Rights Commission could have done more to protect basic human rights under those severe lockdown conditions. Again, it's a difficult balance to strike, public health and human rights. Thank you.
I think it is a difficult balance, but I think that also if, and I mean this with all due respect, but if the Human Rights Commission, you know, is strengthened so that people, you know, we have provincial offices and we have a national office, but if people can see the body as a body that we can turn to when we need this kind of advice and we need help, that would be great. And yes, I mean, the question in terms of shouldn't the Human Rights Commission have been more active and more visible? I agree with you entirely. I think it's not only around, you know, the way the police treated people, but it's also about the issues of people going hungry and people not having water. Those issues are not going away, and we still can do something about it as a commission. So I think that, you know, we don't have to take over. We don't have to be a civil society organization, but we need to better spotlight these issues. And there are real concerns. For example, where I'm just going to give you an example because I know a bit about the water sector, which is you have towns and cities without water, not for days and months, but almost, you know, years. And when Cape Town went through that, the spotlight was there. Everyone was focused on it. As a Human Rights Commission, we need to take that spotlight and turn it onto those areas and show that without water, people are not going to survive. In our constitution, we say that water is a basic human right, and we need to do it consistently and not only when there's a concern, when all hell breaks loose like we see right now.
Thank you so much for your responses. My time is almost finished, but I do appreciate it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart, Honorable Masego Jela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Ms. Adams.
Good morning.
I'll be very short. I have only three questions for you to respond to. And the first one is, as a South African, Ms. Adams, what do you think are some of the South Africa's achievements in advancing human rights? You'll tell me if you want me to repeat it, if maybe you were not clear. Thank you.
I think the Human Rights Commission has done a few things in terms of protecting human rights. The one is we have placed South Africa regionally and internationally on the human rights agenda in terms of being part of bodies. We're chairing, recognizable groupings on human rights. Our voice is heard and we're respected. And that is an important thing. In South Africa, and I'm saying we because I'm South African and it's a structure that's ours as South Africans, right? Is that we've been in existence, the Human Rights Commission, for 25 years. And there have been moments of really a lot of fast-paced good work. And there have been moments that hasn't happened. And you can't expect a structure over 25 years to be consistent. So I have to say that out front. But I think that what the Human Rights Commission has done has been important in terms of raising issues around racism and xenophobia, gender-based violence. You know, it's raised those comments. It's spoken about it. It's come out with reports and research, and it's respected reports and research. And that has been really good to place issues on the agenda and to get people talking, not only to get the issues to Parliament to say this is what people on the ground are saying, but also within civil society. And I think that more and more, if you look at the water report, people are starting to come towards the Human Rights Commission again as a body that can assist. And that is powerful right now. So I think that is a success of the Human Rights Commission as well. So it's had success locally, nationally, and globally. Regionally and globally.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. The next one is, if you are appointed as a commissioner, what innovative means would you adopt to promote public awareness of and access to human rights?
I think that I would like, this is my vision and it's my passion, and I think I would like to go back to civil society, and I mean civil society broadly, organizations, and to say, what is it that you want us to do? And I think that's what we forget sometimes, is that we only wait for complaints and referrals. But I also think that we need to create a stronger link to the people on the ground. And that would be, for me, a vision if, as a commissioner, and a success as a commissioner, to create those linkages and to listen and to say that, you know, what stops us from having an annual, and look at us now with COVID, we can just all link in with Zoom. We don't need a lot of funding. But to have conferences and to have meetings where we're actually listening to people on the ground, what are the challenges, whether it's gender, whether it's small businesses, you know, whether it's children and education, what do they see? What do they see in their future? And that for me would be quite an important thing as commissioner for me to do as a vision.
Thank you very much. Lastly, as you would realize that here in South Africa, we are operating in a very political church environment. How would you handle the complaints that may be potentially politically sensitive or otherwise controversial in the light of your understanding of the role of the Human Rights Commission?
I think that's something that would be important. And I think that is the purpose of the Human Rights Commission. It's to be accountable, it's to be responsive, it's to be independent. And so I think that I have never been, as an activist, and I've been an activist for a long time, I have never been afraid of speaking truth to power, and that I would continue to do. So if an investigation, so, you know, you don't just go and speak out on something, but if an investigation and research shows that actually this is a problem, then I would raise it in the channels that are required and not be afraid to speak about it, but also to use creative ways to actually get the story out and to get, because for me as one person, I'm just a commissioner, but if we can get South Africans supporting that, that would be powerful to then push it forward.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Ms. Adams. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nieuwoud-Tuchen.
Good day, Ms. Adams. Good afternoon, Ms. Adams.
Good afternoon.
I see that I'm using sign language. It's my sign language interpreter's voicing for me. My first question to you is that what is your view on the critical challenges facing the South African Human Rights Commission at this point in time?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your question. I think for me, it's some of the things that I've covered, but I think that some of the challenges is that South Africans have lost faith in the Human Rights Commission. Let's be honest. It is there, and it needs. So that's a challenge that we have. We have a challenge of building our brand in a sense, right? That's the one thing. But are you asking me what are the challenges in terms of things like what are the human rights challenges or the internal organizational challenges? The human rights challenges. Okay. No, the internal organizational.
No, the human rights challenges.
Okay. Thank you. So I think, yeah, it's a lot. I think that it's when you look at it, it actually it's worrying. So we've got things, I would say these are the challenges. We've got high levels of poverty, high levels of unemployment, people going hungry, people without water. So that is one area of challenges. We have a challenge in terms of governance. So where corruption is rife, local governments are falling apart and they can't see to basic services that people need. So that's another element of a challenge, which I think is really difficult. Societal challenges like racism, xenophobia, gender-based violence, femicide, education, kids staying in school, kids having access to education, all of those are challenges that we face. And I don't think that the Human Rights Commission can solve all of those, but they can be the watchdog that needs to watch how these things play out. I also think that we have new challenges coming our way, and we really, really are not prepared for it. And that is the environmental challenges that we are going to be facing. We're already facing shortages of food and in fishing and all of that because of environmental degradation. And I think we just need to look at the floods that happened in Mozambique. You know, it came into, we're not immune. We're in the region, it's going to hit us as well. And we're going to have the same thing. We're going to have people losing their homes. We're going to have health issues. I don't think that this is the last pandemic we'll see. I hope not. You know, I hope that we can solve it. But I do think that health issues are going to be more rife. And so when you talk about the human rights challenges, it's linked to all of that. It's linked to migration. It's linked to xenophobia. And you can't, you know, say, oh, no, this is an education issue, or no, this is a health issue. They linked to human rights directly. And so I think that there's a lot of challenges we have as a country. And it is concerning, but I think that there are a lot of people doing really, really good work and trying to make it better.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Sorry, can the host put, thank you. I won't ask you about COVID because you've covered that, you've responded in a previous question. So I would like to ask you now, each commissioner has separate focus areas. And if you were to be appointed as a commissioner, what two focus areas would you like to work on? What are two focus areas that you think are critical that you can make an improvement or contribution?
So I think the first is an obvious one, which is the environmental one, because I have experience in that. And another one would be the research arm in terms of, so the research arm, which looks at the research that's being done in terms of water, in terms of health, the socioeconomic rights. So looking at economic and social rights, and that would be something that I could also work quite strongly on. So you have the advocacy part and you have the monitoring part. So I would be
able to Ms. Adams, if we could just go to your first your first focus area about the environment. Can you elaborate more about what you would do as a commissioner handling that focus area?
Okay, thank you. So I think that there are a few issues that have been highlighted. For example, I would focus on a few things. One is food, and that's food sovereignty, and then water. And I think those two are linked to each other, but also are the ones that people on the ground are experiencing the most. So I think just as you had done, our water system is in a mess. And I think that it's a violation of people's human rights. It's a crime against our earth. It's a crime against our country in terms of the pollution we have to deal with, like acid mine drainage. So I think in that regard, as a commissioner, I would assist groups who are dealing with this to highlight their issues and also to work towards finding solutions to see how can we solve, because we can't go 25 years from now and have no water in our country that's drinkable. So that is a really important thing. That's what I would do. I would focus on, but also in terms of hunger, more and more we're going to experience drought and it is an environmental issue. And we need to be able to find mechanisms to make sure that people can eat and can have access to food. So that would be, as a community, see what are people doing and to link. It really sometimes needs the linkages of the different groups that are working on small-scale farmers, community gardens, those kind of things, to create those linkages to say food is an important part of our human rights and how do we do it? And so that would be something that I would work on as well. That's in terms of the environmental issues. In terms of, climate, specifically?
Thank you so much, Ms. Adams. Thank you.
Oh, my sorry. Time is... Okay. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, you still have a minute.
Who, me?
If Ms. Adams wants to complete in the 1 minute, I won't say no.
Well, I was just going to say that as a commissioner with climate change, where people still think it's not a human rights issue, as a commissioner, that's something I would raise, and that's something that I would work on to promote and to create the linkages as well.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mola.
Thank you very much, sir. Ms. Adams.
No.
Does the South African Human Rights Commission have a role in promoting social cohesion?
Yes, I think that's part of it. It's part of the role. If you're going to try to promote human rights and the socioeconomic rights and the relations we have with people, then I think it is important to promote social cohesion, but not a false sense of social cohesion. I don't think, racism, for example, is, and xenophobia is something that can split our whole country apart and fragment it. And so I think that creating awareness, educating people and calling out racism and xenophobia when it happens, I think we must talk about it. We must not be afraid to talk about it as South Africans. I'm not talking about the commission, as South Africans. And so the Human Rights Commission can aid that discussion, which builds social cohesion.
The commission has been criticized of not maximizing its efforts in terms of promoting and protecting human rights in the country. Do you think that is a reasonable and justifiable critique?
So I think that there have been some successes, but I don't think that the Human Rights Commission is without criticism. You know, I think that we could have done much more on certain issues. We could be more visible. I think that as a body, we're not as visible. It is, you know, it's supposed to be a body that's independent, but also accountable to government. But I don't think that people on the ground have faith in the independence, and that is a weakness. So there are definite weaknesses within the commission. I also think that the challenges that we face as a country are so huge that we cannot be the be all and end all of all of those, you know, so there'll always be criticisms of we haven't done enough, or you haven't solved an issue, or, you know, where's the Human Rights Commission? But the thing is, you have so many people and so many issues. And so it becomes harder and so we will get that criticism, but it doesn't mean we're not trying as a Human Rights Commission.
Okay. What should the commission do to improve cooperation and coordination with other Chapter 9 institutions and the civil society? And why is this coordination and cooperation so important?
I think it's important because, firstly, we cannot work in silos. Even though we're all working with similar issues, we need to collaborate, and we need to kind of have so we don't duplicate work and efforts. Let's take the Gender Commission, for example. It's a very important body. But there are clear linkages between the Human Rights Commission and the Gender Commission. And working separately is actually diluting the challenges around gender. And that is why I think collaboration is needed, a stronger collaboration is needed, so that it strengthens the issues. And the same can go with, you know, the public protector, et cetera, all those other Section 9 bodies that have different elements that they're working with. But it can strengthen an issue, or it can actually dilute an issue if we work separately.
Thank you. The last question is the Constitution of the Republic has got what we call the Limitation Clause, which is Section 36 of the Constitution. It goes further to say rights can be limited in accordance to the applicable to the law of the general application. To an extent, if the limitation is reasonable and justifiable. So what is your understanding of a justifiable and reasonable limitation of the human right?
I think that so that would be in terms of the greater good of society. So I think, for example, if you take COVID and the lockdown, you know, people were saying that this is a violation of my rights. I need to go where I want to go and my business is failing. But the justifiable kind of restriction is because we're dealing with the pandemic and it's a bigger societal issue. And that's when I think you can say it's a justifiable action.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mola. Honorable Msane.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings, Ms. Adams.
Hello.
With your passion, because I hear you have quite a lot of passion in climate change, with your passion in climate change in mind, what innovations would you wish to introduce in the human rights space if you were appointed as the commissioner? And how do you plan on bringing knowledge and interest of the South African youth in the human rights space, also considering your passion in climate change?
So thank you. I just have a question. When you say innovation, could you just explain what you mean by innovation?
For example, you spoke about climate change. Africa is going to be impacted the most on when it comes to climate change. We will need innovative ways of how we do things when it comes to things like agriculture. So in the space of human rights, we also need to be innovative in order to even the impact of this climate change must be able to be accommodated in the space of human rights.
Okay, so if I was commissioner, so firstly, let's deal with the youth issue. I think that it's an important voice. I think it would be, you know, I think to try and get voices of the youth, firstly, on general human rights issues would be, maybe an idea would be to have a shadow human rights commission with young people, so that their voices are heard. In some places you have shadow parliaments, but obviously that's costly for us as a developing country. So I would do a shadow human rights commission, which takes in youth from various sectors so that they're talking about these issues. And I think that would be a good way of actually placing what youth are saying and what are their challenges on the ground. That's the first thing. The second thing is, in the sector that I work with, there are a lot of youth groups that deal with aspects that relate to climate change. So there's young people who are doing small scale farming. There are young people who are finding ways to make a living. So for example, there's a group that was trained through local government to identify alien vegetation, and they've set up small medium enterprises so that they could be sourced out to other companies to clean up the environment in terms of, so those are the kind of things that young people are doing. We need to link into those voices and see what people are saying. And that could link to the human rights issues around unemployment, around education, around skills training. And so that would be an important thing in terms of the youth. In terms of climate change, what innovative ideas would I bring to the commission? Is that the question, just to make sure?
When you bring innovation, you bring something which is new, something which has never been done. Like,
yes,
we need bright minds, we need new things, you know?
Right.
Considering also that we are in a times of climate change.
Okay. So thank you for the clarification. It's just sometimes I get confused with innovation being, you know, being put into the technology box. But anyway, in terms of that, in terms of climate change and what new things would we do, I think that there's a lot, it sounds like it's not new, but it actually is new stuff. So what people are doing on the ground is to create smaller scale farming. The large farms are not going to feed everyone. So we need to promote people farming wherever they are, having community gardens. That would be something, and that's related to food access. The other thing in terms of innovation is with regards to water, specifically, it is very simple to train ordinary people on the ground and youth how to monitor their water resources, how to work around the water resources that they have. And that is something that can be promoted in the sense of how do we increase people's say and access to water issues. That would be something that it's not done enough, and that would be an innovative way of doing it. Mm-hmm. I am not leaning towards innovation in terms of agriculture and those kind of things. Sorry.
No, I'm fine. I think you've covered me in your answer. I want to move on because I'm pressed with time, but I'm partially covered. Your focus will be on food security, basically. What I want to ask you also, Ms. Adam, is if you are appointed to be commissioner, you will have to obviously lead other people. How would you describe your leadership style? And if you can just provide us briefly, very briefly, my time is very short, on one successful program that you have led successfully and it had benefited South Africans. Very briefly.
So I think my leadership style is one of democracy. It's about leading, but also listening and being open to what people say. So I come from that kind of a background. But I can also be quite firm when I need to be. So it's being able to travel that line. I also bring into leadership and, you know, what we don't often have, which is, a sense of respect and, to not cut off emotions. To have a sympathetic perspective on what is going on. So that for me is leadership. Sorry, the second question was
a successful
successful
program that you've led that benefited South Africans.
Okay, so I think that I've always worked in smaller organizations, so I can't say that I've benefited South Africa as a whole.
It's not a town as long as they've benefited it, they're South Africans.
Okay, all right. I have worked with organizations in terms of the Free Basic Electricity Act. So what we did was we brought in a group of women in a few areas around Johannesburg who were having problems with access to electricity, but also I trained them to monitor their electricity, and you know they were taking the amount of electricity they were using per day, and through that we developed a research report to counter the free basic electricity allowance within the policy that I think it's 50 kilowatts per household per year, per month. And we promoted it to say that it's not enough. It needs to be more. And there are some municipalities who actually have increased the amount of free basic electricity that people can get. That's the one thing. The other thing is I worked on, but this is more on a scientific program. I worked on the Square Kilometer Array Radio Telescope, where I was the environmental manager. And I worked with a team to create the report, the bid document, And I was responsible for managing all the environmental reports, as well as all the geographic information system maps in that report. And well, we did quite successful in the square kilometer array. So that's two different hats.
Tell me, which support skills do you think are important when it comes to effective leadership in an organization such as the Human Rights Council?
Sorry, I missed your first question. What was that? Effective support?
Which supporting skills and why? Yeah.
Okay.
Very, very briefly, I think I have like 50 seconds.
So supporting skills for leadership, I think that firstly there's leadership and there's management, right? Leadership is about being strategic. It's about being able to steer a project and to get to an end goal and to assist the strategic outcome of a project through leadership. It's also about the values. It's about inculcating the values of the organization, inculcating the values of human rights throughout, and that's leadership. And it includes openness, transparency. But there's also management. And often we get confused with the two. So in terms of management, it's about ensuring, you know, that you have a project plan, that you meet your deadlines, you manage your team in terms of if someone is not doing as well as they need to, or if someone is doing as well as is recognition of that the team efforts. So that's something that's management and leadership. And what I would do is bring the connection to both.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janja.
Thank you very much, Chair. Ms. Ferio Adams, let's start with the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. What section of the Constitution deals with the appointments of commissioners?
Well, I would say that the Section 9, you know, of the Constitution sets up the Human Rights Commission. I'll be honest, I am not 100% on all aspects of the Constitution. I know it's there, but I can't tell you which section specifically.
So you did come to this interview that we're going to, if we successfully appoint you, you've not checked on what basis we're appointing you.
I did check on the basis, but I can't remember the section.
Let me be generous. The section is Section 193 of the Constitution, and I'm going to walk you through it. Subsection 1 says, the public protector and the members of any commission must be women or men who are South Africans, fit and proper. I want you to help this panel. Why is subsection 1 saying women or men, and it's not saying persons?
Well, I think that it alludes to, you know, the injustices of the past, that the Constitution was written at a particular time, and we know that even now we don't have equal representation of men and women in positions. So I think just saying person means that you could end up without gender equity. And so, of course, you need to specify women so that you can make sure that women are recognized for these leadership positions.
Thank you. And part B of subsection 1 deals with a fit and proper commissioner. Help us understand what is meant by a fit and proper commissioner. You came here praying to be a commissioner. It requires that we appoint a fit and proper one. What does that mean?
I think a fit and proper commissioner needs to firstly have knowledge about issues around human rights. They also need to not be someone who has a history of violating people's rights. So that's fit and proper. They cannot be racist. They have to abide to the values of being a commissioner. So no, they cannot be racist. They cannot violate people's rights. They cannot discriminate. And those are the essence and, you know, the core values of a commissioner. In addition, they need to be able to have an understanding of the country, have an understanding of the politics around, and be able to work within the commission within those requirements, and that's fit and proper.
Let's come to Feryl Adams. Are you fit and proper?
I think I am.
I repeat the question. Is Feryl Adams fit and proper?
Yes, Feryl Adams is fit and proper. I think that the values, I aspire to the values of non-racism, non-sexism, non-discrimination. I also think that my education and my work experience give me a combination of civil society, government, and science and social sciences. So I think I'm fit and proper.
Okay, let's walk with you being fit and proper to the next section, section two, subsection two of that, which requires that we balance geographical spread, issues of race, gender, and so on. Why would we recommend you amongst other women of the same age, same performance, and even who are also activists? So what value do you bring? Why you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, why me is that I have a unique combination of skills, both science, both management, leadership. And yes, there are many activists, but I think that I have the ability to see issues on a broader scale and not just issue related. So not just gender, not just climate change, not just unemployment, but I have the ability to actually have an overview of issues. And that's powerful to kind of monitor human rights violations. So I think that is something I have. And I also have, I'm fearless and courageous. I think that I can.
I don't know about that. I don't know. You might have looked into the commission's work from a distance. This is my next question. What have you found out? Did you find out whether this commission, the South African Human Rights Commission, is successful in pursuing its mandate? Earlier on, you said it has lost faith. I want you to give us one area where the Human Rights Commission has lost faith, but also pick up one area where you think they're doing good work.
Okay, so I think that in terms of the Human Rights Commission, it's people who have lost faith in a lot of the Section 9 institutions in South Africa. It's not just the Human Rights Commission.
Let's stay on the Human Rights Commission.
Yes. I'm just starting big, right? And I think that firstly, when the Human Rights Commission comes out with reports and when it it releases information, people feel that it has no teeth to take it further than that. And so they kind of sit back and say, well, then why go to the Human Rights Commission? That is the element of losing faith. I think that where it was different was with this water report that was recently released. It gave activists on the ground and communities on the ground a sense of someone's listening to us. But where to from here is the question. And I don't even know what the Human Rights Commission can do following on that. So that's one area. In other areas of strength, I think the Human Rights Commission has been really strong.
We can pause there. I want you to tell us, if you are successful, what one area of improvement would you bring?
So the area that I would bring would be, so let's look at the purpose or the functions of the Human Rights Commission, right? We deal with inquiries. It's hearing, redress. So I would focus on redress for victims.
Okay.
I would make sure that that becomes a strong point of our reports, and any kind of human rights violations that we find is to work towards redress. And when we do that, and that's part of our mandate, I think people would have faith in us.
My last point, Chair, as I learned, you've called yourself an activist. How are you going to relate and take complaints of people who are not activists, but they look up to the human rights? People who actually hate activists like yourself.
I think when I'm a commissioner, I don't think, or if I'm a commissioner, I don't think that I would go around saying I'm an activist to people, I think that that already changes the dynamic with, in relations to people. Even right now, the work that I do, there's a handful of activists, but a lot of the other you know, the people that we're listening to, where we do our research, where we do our reporting, it's ordinary citizens. And so I already do that. And so okay. It's not okay. Something new.
Let's pause there. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Ms. Ferial Adams.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Adams, is there anything that you would want to declare which, if found out, can put you and the Commission possibly in bad light?
I believe there's nothing, Chairperson.
There's nothing. Thank you very much. How would you characterize this engagement with you? Do you think the questions were fair? Do you think the interview was fair?
It was tough, but fair.
Fair. Now, thank you very much, Ms. Adams. We are still going to await the screening reports because the fingerprints came late. So before we make a decision, we are going to await the screening reports, but we would want, as soon as we receive the report, we would make a decision and you would be notified as soon as possible. It will have to go to the National Assembly to be processed by the National Assembly, but as soon as that is done, you would know. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much to you, Chairperson, and to all the members of Parliament and Portfolio Committee who have given me this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Adams. The next candidate is...